Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Jordan Malley producing tonight. Joe Ostrowski here, 670 The Score. Jordan, I had a moment today when I wondered if I should file divorce papers. I'm not kidding around. Like, my wife thinks it's funny. I don't think it's funny at all. There was a big Tupperware of freshly cut strawberries. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have that as part of my lunch. I guess she cut them in four pieces, right? I don't know how you're supposed to cut strawberries. Some people make like five or six cuts going across. So I grab a spoonful of strawberries and I'm like, ooh, that's not right. I think I took too many. I didn't really chew it. I'm choking, man. I'm choking. I could breathe a little bit, but it was tough. I'm screaming for my wife, like, I'm choking. She stopped by. She punched me in the back a bunch of times, and some strawberries came out, but the one that was lodged was still there. Then she walks away, like, I'm still not okay. I can breathe, but my face is maybe purple. She gets on a work call.
Joe O, night 6 to 10.
Like, what is going? Like, my son was so scared that he ran upstairs. And he tells my daughter, who's six, right? He's going to turn eight soon. And I can hear him. Like, my wife's on a call in the other room doing a work call. I'm still choking in the kitchen by myself. My son ran upstairs. And I can hear him telling my daughter, Dad's choking. Her and her friends start laughing. Like, nobody's helping me. Does anybody want to help me?
Nights on 670 The Score.
That happened. Jordan Malley said, I want an update. I'm alive. That's the update. Are you asking if I filed for divorce?
No, I needed an update to see if your wife had any reaction after the fact.
No, I keep bringing it up to her and she denies that any of this happened. Oh, you were fine. You like to exaggerate. You make a big deal out of nothing. You're trying to make people laugh. Like, no, I was dying. I was dying. So yesterday, maybe I should stop doing this or I'm going to get canceled, Jordan, because I didn't mean to do this, but yes, I did. Yesterday, my wife walks in from Kohl's and she was very excited. She went by herself, so I was at home, my son was at home, and she was so excited about some Bears apparel that she purchased. Pulls it out. It's like, look at this Bears jersey I got. It was only $10. It used to be $60. It's so cute, right? Pulls it out of the bag. It's a Mitch Trubisky youth jersey for my son. One of the orange ones, which I'm not a fan of the orange, and maybe I'm the only one, but I don't really care for the orange jerseys. But if you listen to this show, Mitch Trubisky.
Tunnel vision, earmuffs.
You guys know me better than my wife, as far as Trubisky, at least. My son goes, I don't like it. I was dying. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment. I was a proud father.
I was going to say, you taught him well and early. That's for sure.
But she's like, I'm just looking at her. I'm just staring at her. I'm not even smiling, not laughing. I'm not mad either. I just give this blank stare right at her. It's like, what? He's the quarterback of the Bears, right? I'm like, kind of. I didn't really know how to answer that because the Bears don't want to tell us. He maybe at some point, first game, I don't know. But like, what? So the reason I brought that up is because I posted that on Twitter. A lot of people had a good laugh because they know how much I can't stand Mitchell Trubisky and or Ryan Pace. And then somebody was coming at me saying, oh, you know, you shouldn't laugh about divorce. Like, people get divorced. It's not funny. You were talking about that the other day when you were choking on a strawberry. Like, that was not supposed to be the takeaway.
Dadgummit!
Throwaway line about me choking and mentioning divorce. Like, no. The story was about me dying in my home and a wife, a son, and a daughter, and nobody going to help Dad. But it was funny because, Jordan, people were going back at this guy. He's probably going through a tough time. So I guess I call him out on the radio. That's my style. But
Joe, I was going to say, though. Like,
but people are like, wait, yeah, let's cancel him. Yeah.
Unreal. I was going to say, the takeaway I had was the fact that you can joke with your wife and your family that much is a testament to you, because that is fantastic. That's what you should be able to do. It reminds me of a lot of, like, my dad, especially when we would go on vacations. You know, you would see everybody get out and pile out of the rental car, and we'd all go into the hotel for the first time, and who's the one dragging all 12 or 13 bags in through the door, nobody helping him?
Pop.
It's my poor dad.
Yes, exactly. Not everything has to be so serious, man. Oh, there's enough of that going on, and it's in our face 24/7. Like, jeez, we're all going through tough times right now. A lot of you are working and teaching at the same time. Maybe not teaching, but trying to keep your child focused on e-learning. Like, yeah, this all sucks. It sucks for everyone involved. And we're just hoping sports will stick around for a little bit so we can get some joy from time to time. Anyways, Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, the Score Rewind Hour. What we do is we bring back some of the best stuff throughout the day you may have missed. What do we want to start with, Jordan? Because I know I rambled a little bit there.
Let's go with your conversation with David Sampson.
You want to go with David Sampson? I thought he was terrific. CBS Sports HQ, former president of the Miami Marlins. Good day to get some insight. What goes on behind the scenes the day of the trade deadline. So here's my conversation with David Sampson. It was very early in the show, so you may have missed it. And he has positive remarks on what the Cubs and Sox did today. Take a listen.
You know what? I do miss the action. Many people who are out of the sport say, I don't miss it, and everything's great. I love doing Nothing Personal and being with CBS and being with you on the radio. And I don't ever want to go back. I had 18 great years. But on a day like this, I think about the 18 trade deadlines I was a part of. And when I see the moves like the Marlins were making and what you try to do to get better when you're shedding money or selling or buying, I love that competition. I miss winning or losing at the end of every day. And that's gone now that I'm out of baseball.
Is there a story that you could share, a deal that you thought was going to get done and then the deadline hit and never happened?
Well, so many deadline stories. I mean, I can tell you that what we did at the deadline is that we would have a board. So I'd be in there with the president of baseball operations, whether it was Larry Beinfest or later Mike Hill, Dan Jennings, bunch of scouts. We'd have our analytics people in. We'd bring in a whiteboard. And what we'd do is we would write down a list of players who we wanted to acquire, who we felt would not be traded, no matter what. And we would call the team and say, we have an interest in, just pick a player. Just a good example, say a Mike Trout before he got even better than he is now. What would it take? Anybody from our roster, we want Mike Trout. And so we would go through different deals like that and make calls, just trying to see if something could potentially happen. And none of those crazy deals ever happened, but some of them did. In terms of, we did a big deal with the Dodgers with Brad Penny and Juan Encarnacion and Paul LaDuca. So there's always deals to be done. The question is, do they work? Some years they do, some years they don't. I love that the White Sox did nothing, because this was not the year for them to do something. They did all their heavy lifting in the offseason.
Yeah, okay, so let's go into the White Sox a little bit. There were some fans thinking, okay, we got to get Lance Lynn. Clevinger goes to San Diego early on, so let's go for it. Tell us more about why you like the Sox here. Earlier I was talking about all the control they have with guys like Robert, Aloy, Moncada, Cease, Tim Anderson for many, many years to come. So tell us why you like what they did not do.
So you just said something that fans need to pay attention to. You said a word, which is we have to do something. And when you've got a baseball executive or an owner who goes in with that view that you have to do something, you are guaranteed to make a mistake. So the best way to run a deadline and to run a team is to not be emotional, be secure in the decisions you've made up to this point, and recognize that change for change's sake does not necessarily make your team better. And the White Sox are a team, they get along great, they have a great clubhouse, they're playing very well, they have no discernible weaknesses, and it would have been subtraction by trying to have an addition to force a deal. So I'm perfectly fine with them not doing anything.
How much do you talk to the manager about chemistry and what's happening in the clubhouse before a trade deadline?
So we would try not to do that. And the reason is that we want our manager to take the 25 guys we give him and manage. We'll worry about everything else. We're in the clubhouse enough that we're aware of chemistry issues. We're aware if there's a player who's not happy and we want to get rid of him, or there's a player who has an issue. We know all those things. We try to let the manager sort of just be, we used to call it plausible deniability, because the manager's there with the players all the time. And we don't want the players to think that the manager is some sort of snitch who is going behind their back and saying things to the front office. So we run the team, give the manager his players, and let the manager manage.
So the Cubs just made some tweaks over the last couple of days. They add a bat in Jose Martinez. Today they get Cameron Maben and a couple of left-handed arms out of the pen. We think a couple, but maybe one of them, only Osich, is actually pitching for the team. Sitting 3.5 games ahead in the National League Central, what did you think of the Cubs' approach?
You know, the Cubs started off so well, but the fact is, since Bryant went down, it hasn't been as good. They've got a team that is in a position where you have so much uncertainty when it comes to revenue next season. We just don't know if fans will be allowed. We don't know what kind of rebound there'll be in the economy, what'll be with COVID. And they've got a serious amount of core pieces to deal with, that the way the expanded playoffs are now causes two different results. One is for a team like the Marlins, who say, hey, we're going for it because we haven't been in the playoffs, we think we can make it. And one is the Cubs, we are going to make it, so therefore we're not going to do anything that will hurt our future. And I like that plan if you're the Cubs, but I also think it's okay what the Marlins did. So there was room in this deadline for all sorts of action by different teams.
This is Joe Ostrowski with David Sampson, former Marlins president. See his work on CBS Sports HQ on Twitter at David P. Sampson. So, yes, with the 20-14 record, Cubs are sitting there. They're not viewed as a top-tier team like the Dodgers. Maybe not even I guess they're certainly a second-tier team because they're division leaders here. But we've talked about it in the past with Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, and Schwarber all up at the end of next year. And it seems like Quintana and Chatwood, they'll walk at the end of the season, and you won't get much back. Are you okay with what they could or could not do with Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, and Schwarber? Because we know that core there is going to be split up sometime soon.
Oh, it's a guarantee. You can't sign them all. And you just hope that they make the evaluations and they do it right. You hope that if they choose Rizzo, that he's the one long-term who's going to work out. I don't see them signing Schwarber long-term. If they can get Rizzo and Baez done, they may try, but I think it's possible only one of those three gets done long-term.
Were you hearing anything about what the cost was for Lance Lynn?
So the Rangers are an interesting situation because they were supposed to open their new ballpark with fans, and their new ballpark will have attendance in its first year worse than our new ballpark at Marlins Park in 2012. they're going to be at zero, and I feel for them. But they also tried to bring in a bunch of middling pitchers, thinking that that would be enough to make them good, and it was just doomed from the start. So I feel badly that they had to be sellers. But if you're going to be a seller, then sell. And they chose to keep Lance Lynn because he's got an $8 million deal next year, and they're going to treat next year as the first year in the new stadium. So therefore, you just sort of get rid of Minor, keep Gallo, keep Lynn, and try to pretend that this year never actually happened. I get that, but the problem is the year did actually happen, and players get a year older. The production goes down. So they, to me, needed a retool. And if you're going to be successful, you trade players at the high. There will never be a chance to get more for Lance Lynn than there was right now 4 hours ago. Never. And they missed that opportunity, and it will never come back.
I want to get to some teams that made some moves here, but also, what about the Angels with Dylan Bundy, Joe Maddon's team? Why did they keep Bundy?
Because if you are Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, you cannot possibly put your head on the pillow and say, we're sellers. In an expanded playoffs, after you signed Rendon to the biggest contract for a position player, you have Mike Trout, you've got Pujols, who's basically an expiring ordinary player now for one of the best players I ever saw play. You just can't believe that they have the worst record in the American League. It literally doesn't compute for you, so you can't act as though it's the truth, even though it's right there in front of you, in the internet, in the standings, every single day.
Is San Diego the clear-cut second-best team in the NL?
No, because no team with A.J. Preller as GM is the clear-cut anything. Don't underestimate how hard it is to redo an entire clubhouse with a month to go in the season. It's the anti-White Sox, right? So they made moves because that's what he does. He always needs to make moves. But it doesn't always work. You cannot say with a straight face that Larry Rothschild, the pitching coach for San Diego, is going to be able to make it easier for two brand new catchers to learn an entire staff with a month to go until the playoffs. It's just not going to happen that way. Yet he thought that he could redo all of the catching, and I just think that will backfire. I like their team fine, but they're not close to the Dodgers. I think the Cubs would beat them in a short series or even a long series. And I think San Diego is a first round loser in October.
Wow. Any winners that stand out today?
Well, can we call the Dodgers a winner because they're so deep that they didn't have to do anything except they traded away a starting pitcher in Ross Stripling, but they've built such an organization by being so smart with the money they have that to me, they're like permanent winners. And the other team is my old team, the Marlins. Getting Starling Marte and trading away Jonathan Villar to make the money work and getting Griffin Conine from the Blue Jays. It's pretty amazing. They traded a starting pitcher, Caleb Smith, who had a good first half last year, and that's all he's ever done. So I thought it was very impressive. The Marlins decided to cut short their rebuild and try to win. And when there's expanded playoffs, and they haven't been in the playoffs since 2003, which I very well know. Why not go for it?
I don't think David Sampson likes A.J. Preller. What do you think, Jordan Malley?
I wouldn't think so either.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't even think that was tough. I thought it was kind of a layup, but because it seemed obvious that with the addition of an ace at the deadline, and you're already a pretty good team with Tatis, a Machado, some of the other pieces they have in San Diego, okay, they're the second best team. Nope. First round and done. Because A.J. Preller sucks.
I do get his point about the catchers, though. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. That was like me scratching my head. Like, what are you doing? You're going to throw your entire staff off?
I saw the news right as it happened, and I went and looked at the World Series odds, and San Diego was 25, and then about 30 seconds later, they were down to 20. And then a few minutes later, they were down to 17-1. I'm like, okay, this is a little ridiculous. They haven't done anything, man.
And yeah, changing to two catchers, there's a lot going on there. I understand why you would get excited about them, but to say they're in the 15 to 20 to 1 range, like, no, they're not quite that good. But hey, the White Sox are lower than that, and so are the Cubs. And I think the Padres, probably better than both teams. Probably. At least they have a better shot than the White Sox just because it's easier in the National League than it is in the American League. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. That was my conversation from earlier this evening with David P. Sampson, former president of the Marlins. Enjoyed that. The guy has some things to say, and he's not afraid to say it. We'll keep it with baseball. The day of the deadline, we'll get the reaction of a national baseball writer. You see him on MLB Network all the time. His name, John Morosi. He's a regular on McNeil and Parkins. We'll get his reaction next to the Cubs and the White Sox doing absolutely nothing today. This is 670 The Score and the Radio.com app. Joe Osho, 670 The Score, Score Rewind Hour, bringing you some of the best stuff of the day you may have missed. I know many of you were tracking the trade deadline till we got there at 3 o'clock. And as the trade deadline was coming to a close, MLB Network's John Morosi joined the McNeil and Parkins Show, like I believe he does every single week, and got his reaction on the lack of activity involving the White Sox and the Cubs' little tweaks they made over the last couple of days. Take a listen.
Well, I think that one of the key things is the fact that MLB has allowed teams to use the player to be named later clause as a way of getting around what initially was that requirement to have only players on the 60-man player pool traded for other players on the 60-man player pool. So that was originally the way the rule was written as the season began. That has now changed. And I think what we're seeing as a result, a lot of different moves made. Certainly it saves teams some money, the teams that are sellers right now, and allows them to really reposition themselves for the future. And also I think we're seeing this general attitude about the winter time and just not really knowing what the offseason market's going to look like. So if you've got a player that you want to get now who's on a reasonably affordable contract for this year and next year or beyond, get the player. And the Padres did that right now, and Clevinger now can impact their club not just for – this year, but the next couple after that.
John, is there a feeling Clevinger sealed his fate in Cleveland by violating COVID-19 protocol?
I think that was a significant part of the decision. The question there, if that had not happened, would Clevinger be a Padre today? And I think the answer is probably not, because the Indians, he still is a real key part of their club, or was a key part of their club, and they're a better team with him than without him from the standpoint of their pure pitching. But they were able to bring back so many players as a result of this that I think actually it started to make sense. I don't think they would have gotten to this point where they had an offer that was out there that appealed to them had that incident and the whole fallout around it not transpired. I mean, certainly we've seen the Indians last year with Trevor Bauer and Corey Kluber before or during the offseason. They've made a lot of significant trades involving pitchers because they've got so much depth. And so from that standpoint, roster-wise, they had the mechanics and they had the underlying depth to make this deal. But I don't think that emotionally and mentally they would have gotten to this point had that incident not occurred.
Major League Baseball announcing the discipline of the Reds-Cubs incident from Saturday. Mike Borzello has been suspended one game. David Bell, the manager of the Reds, suspended one game. Jesse Winkler, the outfielder for the Reds, suspended one game. And Joey Votto has been fined an undisclosed amount of money. We're talking to John Morosi 20 minutes ahead of the baseball trade deadline. How aggressive have the White Sox been in terms of what they've been willing to potentially dangle to bring back significant help for their pitching staff?
Well, and that's a key question, because it to me, I am a little bit surprised, and I'll certainly withhold judgment. We've got 20 minutes now to the deadline. I've heard them involved on Lance Lynn. I've heard them involved on Dylan Bundy. So it's hard to know how aggressive it is until you really get to the final horn and you see what they've offered or if they got the player there or they didn't. But it seems like to me, if I'm a White Sox fan and they don't make a deal in the next 20 minutes, I think I'd be mildly disappointed on the pitching side. Look, the team is so good. The lineup is so entertaining that they're a joy to watch, even if they don't do a single thing to the roster for the balance of the year. But I'm here to tell you, this team could win the World Series if they get one more starting pitcher who's of that caliber to really help them go up against anybody else. Because I think one of the real storylines right now in the American League is who's the favorite? Who do we think is the team to beat in the American League? And right now the Rays have the best record. The A's have had the best record for a long time. You've got both the Yankees and the Astros are now in the bottom half of the playoff teams. They're like seated, I think, fifth and sixth right now. The Yankees are one game ahead of the Blue Jays. So this is a time when, with the Red Sox rebuilding, this is open. This is not quite like 05 circumstances for the White Sox, but it's there for them. And I really think that there's a moment to be seized there. The lineup is perfect. We know that. There's really not much you could do with that lineup. But I think that if they're one starting pitcher away from being able to arrive to October and say, listen, we have got as good of a chance to win this thing as anybody else in the American League.
Yeah, and I wonder if Rick Hahn is just not willing to compromise anything, any of his few, and that includes Vaughn, who has yet to make an impact at the big league level. I don't know if he's touchable in Rick's mind. What are you hearing about the demands for the fleshy Lance Lynn?
Well, I mean, Lance Lynn, you look at his numbers this year. He has been, I think, the third best pitcher in the game by his ERA so far this season. And the key thing is he's there for next year, too. And if I'm the White Sox, I think whether it's today in the next 18 minutes or this winter, I think for them to be the club that we all look at them potentially being in 2021, they have to probably get one more starting pitcher. And Lynn is probably as good as they get right now. Now, I think that the interesting part about this that we don't know, and obviously the White Sox and their conversations, it's obviously, you know, delicate in terms of what Kopech would want to do, where he is at with respect to next year. If he's feeling as though he's going to want to pitch next year and physically he's there and obviously mentally ready to do it as well, that obviously Kopech could be someone that teams look at and say, listen, in normal circumstances, they wouldn't be able to get Kopech, but maybe today they can. And certainly it's a fluid situation with him. And if he's able to come back and pitch next year for the Rangers, for example, I would imagine that Lance Lynn for Kopech is something that, depending on whatever the most current information is on where he's at with respect to 2021, that could be a really interesting proposal for both sides.
We're talking to John Morosi, MLB Network and Fox Sports. The Cubs have added Jose Martinez, AJ Ramos, and now Andrew Chafin. What do those moves tell you about what Theo and company are trying to accomplish?
I think, Danny, it's a matter of really rounding out the roster and balancing things out. This is not a team that has to probably have a major overhaul today. They didn't really need to have that, I don't believe. And so I think it's just a matter of really working with that bullpen. I think all along we've looked at this bullpen and said, along with Kyle Ryan, maybe they need one more lefty. Chafin can do that. I think that's a really key move there. And augmenting the bench as well. Martinez, of course, a very unique circumstance with the National League having the DH this year. I think that's a really intriguing factor for them. And looking at the potential opponents in the National League playoffs, to have a righty to go up against a Clayton Kershaw in a playoff series against the Dodgers. I think that's those types of things. The Cubs have played well enough this year. They don't need to have a dramatic change to their team today, but I do think you have to really shore up some parts of the roster for them to be able to have an excellent chance to upset what's going to be a very formidable Dodger team and a very strong Padres team. I think we see now here in the NL this season. I think, you know, the one thing that I'd heard little whispers of the last 72 hours or so is with Chatwood's injury and lack of effectiveness and then Quintana and what his role might be, that maybe they would want a starting pitcher. But the question there is, how would that affect their playoff rotation when you consider who the top four might be there? There's a lot of questions there, but I do think that different ways of managing their pitching going forward might be required if they don't have that same level of just rotation studs 1 through 4, depending on how a playoff series lines up in comparison to the Los Angeles Dodgers.
How much did the Padres close the gap on the Dodgers?
I feel like it's going to take a while for us to sift through all these moves and just see what this team looks like again for a week or so before we really get a full sense of it. But it's exciting. It's great for the game. AJ Preller is someone who, when he gets going, Joel Sherman made this point today on MLB Network that it's hard for him to stop. I think we saw him make those moves in his first winter as the GM of the Padres, and it's that same mentality now. And I think Clevenger, at his best day, he can go up against Walker Buehler or anybody. Kershaw with the Dodgers, he's that good on his best day. And you also have Chris Paddock, who's been very strong. You've got probably the best, the most exciting player right now in the National League in Tatis, and Machado has played better, and Jake Cronenworth, of course, from the University of Michigan, has played very well. So they've got a nice group of players already to then add the likes of Jason Castro, a very good receiver, Nola. There's a lot of nice moves they made that I think have made this a more complete team, and adding a lot of playoff experience, they hope, with the likes of Rosenthal as well, to a team that has not collectively been there since 06. So it's an exciting time for the Padres. I don't think they're better than the Dodgers right now, but it's close. And we have seen before, the Dodgers have lost to teams in the playoffs who were not better than the Dodgers. And I certainly think the Padres are close enough that at least the Dodgers, and maybe that's part of the Lance Lynn courtship right now, the Dodgers may be feeling a little bit of pressure right now from San Diego.
John Morosi with McNeil and Parkin, Sports Radio 670. The Score, Joe Ostrowski here during Score Rewind. Don't look now. It may not feel like it, but we're going to have Chiefs, Texans for real in 10 days. And Matt Nagy won't tell you who the starting quarterback is going to be, but tonight he revealed that he'll tell you next week. I have a sneaking suspicion that we'll find out well before that time. We'll get to Hub Arkish on the Score on the Dan Bernstein Show earlier today talking about this quarterback battle. That is next on 670 The Score and the radio.com app.
With naming a quarterback, that's something internally that we're going to stick to. But I would say for you guys to know, just to save you the questions, that won't be happening before that game.
I can't verify it, okay? I need to protect the audience from stuff like this.
Please, please, please don't ask me about it because I'm not going to tell you. And you see the field. Both these guys stink, so we have no idea which guy's going to start. That's what Matt Nagy said the other day. But tonight, he said, you will find out this week. Oh, no. Oh, Detroit, you're going to be able to catch up on all that sleep next week because I know you are very concerned. Is it going to be this bad quarterback or this mediocre quarterback? What will we do? Detroit, by the way, favored in that game. Lions are favored over the Bears without a crowd. Just saying. Meaning most years when we say you give 3 points, you give the really good home field, you give 3.5 points or 4 even, a once in a great while. Yeah, that's not happening this year. It's like a point. Lions are favored over the Bears. Just saying.
Bears!
Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Get to Hub Arkish in just a quick second, but did want to thank my guests this evening, David Sampson of CBS Sports, Brett Taylor of Bleacher Nation, Brian Perez, NBC Sports Chicago, and Josh Nelson of The Sox Machine. If you missed any of those conversations, I recommend you check out the podcast posted on 670thescore.com. In the morning, I'll have the links out there on Twitter as well, @JoeO670, @JoeO670. Good job out of producer Jordan Malley. We leave you with Hub Arkish and his weekly chat with Dan Bernstein right here on 670 The Score. Good night.
Hub Arkish is the son of an Arkish and the father of many Arkishes, and he's with us on a day when we're trying to figure out what this weekend meant for the Bears, because I didn't really come away with much of anything based on the descriptions and sort of a collective shrug, Hub.
Yeah, you know, I think that's fair, Dan. It was tough to gauge what they were getting from the quarterbacks, in part because, and this was obviously intentional, prior to the scrimmage, every snap was scripted to be a different situation. So we get out there, and on the first play, I believe it was about a 4 or 5 yard run, and I wasn't paying much attention, but you look up and it says second 11. The second play was like a 19 yard completion from Mitch Trubisky to Riley Ridley, and then it was third and 11. And so, you know, the day went that way, and they kind of kept going back and forth. It was not a full live scrimmage. It was what they call thud, so they were making first contact. There was some interesting line play to watch. And, you know, there's definitely a focus on the running game. I think that is a theme of this training camp so far. And at least the initial holes, the quickness through them. Cordarrelle Patterson in particular looked very good. This undrafted rookie free agent Artavis Pierce, who you know they like a lot since they didn't go get anybody else, also, you know, shows some quickness. Backs catching the ball out of the backfield. You know, other than that, as far as the defense, I mean, other than, you know, Kyle Fuller basically owned the football field, but it was kind of tough to really gauge much beyond that.
The quarterbacks are, anything that they do can be mitigated for better or for worse. They can say, well, we asked him to do this, or this was against this grouping, or you weren't allowed to cut Roy Roberts and Harris and chop him down so he's able to make a play he wouldn't otherwise have made. It does seem to be following the script of so many previous quarterback competitions where they will be able to pick whoever they want and then find a way to retroactively justify it.
Well, they're going to have to, because there's really not much else they can do. I believe that their hope was to have an open competition, but once they took away the four preseason games, those hopes went away. As far as what we've seen in training camp, I think the overall consensus would be that Mitch got off to a quicker start, as we expected he would, because he's familiar with his teammates and timing and receivers and all that. And Nick Foles just met these guys 3 weeks ago. Then last week, prior to the scrimmage, Mitch, as early as I think it was Monday, I can't remember where the off day came, but the first day last week, he suddenly looked to be struggling a little bit. Foles started to look a little bit better. But what was really interesting to me on Saturday is I talked to one of the other beat guys who I respect greatly, and he says, boy, did you see what I saw? I thought that Foles, you know, was much better today. And I kind of raised my eyebrows and I was like, no, I didn't see that. And then I read the piece of another one of the guys who I respect a great deal, and he said it was a clear win for Mitch. So just in the scrimmage, that's kind of what we've been seeing. I think at the end of the day, and I asked Matt after the scrimmage, hey, man, what if this thing ends in a draw, which is the way it's kind of looking? I'd say Trubisky still has a slight lead. He got a little better later in the week. I really think it was pretty even on Saturday. So let's say that Mitch has the slightest of leads, or it's just a draw. And I said, do you flip a coin? And Matt kind of laughed. He said, no, we won't flip a coin. He said, there's all kinds of things that we're evaluating. But even he acknowledged that this thing is too tough to call. So here's what's going to happen. Whichever one they give the job to, most are going to say it wasn't really a competition. This is what they wanted to do anyway. But what I think they're kind of stuck with at this point, because it really is a draw, is you have to remember, all of the success in Nick Foles' career and some huge successes have come as a backup. You know, when he has had the opportunity to be the starting quarterback of his team, and it's happened on three different occasions, I wouldn't say he failed. In 2013, he comes off the bench week six and is otherworldly in relief of Mike Vick for the rest of the season, a Pro Bowl selection, 27 touchdowns, two picks, thought he's the new franchise quarterback for the Eagles. He gets the job the next year, and it's not that he was off to a horrible start. He was actually playing okay. It's that the team was struggling, and then he got nicked up. I think it was week eight or week nine, and never got the job back. He got the job in St. Louis, didn't play well, couldn't hold it. He gets the job in Jacksonville, gets injured on opening day, but then comes back midseason and doesn't play well. You flip it around with Trubisky, he's been the starter, you know, since week five of his rookie year. If you make him the backup, which he's never been before, you have no idea how he's going to respond to that. So to me, Foles always had to be a clear winner to be the opening day starter, and that clearly hasn't happened. So, you know, it's just a question of, was it not a real competition? Was it going to be Foles all along? Because if he gets the job, I think you can draw that conclusion. If it was a real competition, or if they're going on traits, then it's going to be Trubisky.
I look at this through a different prism as well, because we can say, make the right call on the quarterback. We can also say, don't make the wrong call on the quarterback. And the way I define wrong call, for sure, regardless of the name, if you pick the guy that isn't the guy the players think won the job, or in more specifically, isn't the guy that your team thinks gives them the best chance to win. So if you're a head coach, what's the right way to manage that? And sometimes you say, well, you've got players you trust, or if you have some sort of named, you know, leadership council, you don't want to be canvassing everybody. You don't want to be putting a finger to the wind. But you have to be an aware enough head coach to know that if you screw that up, if you name your starting quarterback and it's not the guy they think gives them the best chance to win, then you're dead in the water. What's the best way to avoid it?
Well, I think your point is right on, Dan, but in this particular case, there's so many other factors that are playing into this, and everybody's focus right now was on the COVID-19, and that really switched in the last, 8 days now since Kenosha. And so what we've seen with this team, and we've heard Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace both talk about it from the moment Nagy got here, a lot of it's about culture. And these guys are very much arms locked and going in the same direction. One thing about Mitch, regardless of what they thought about him on the field, he didn't have detractors in the locker room, never did. Nick Foles is an impossible guy not to like and want to get behind. And while I'm sure these guys are aware he's a Super Bowl MVP, they haven't had a chance to see that yet. So I think because of all the negative stuff they've had to fight, it's going to be a positive in terms of, I don't think anybody's going to fault the decision. As a matter of fact, I think the biggest risk, because it's been Mitch's team for the last 2.5 years, would be to give the job to Foles without his clearly winning it on the field. And he clearly has not won it on the field. But again, in fairness to everybody, he couldn't. You know, that's what those 4 preseason games were going to be about.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.